Annual Logic for 28th of July and introducing my very interesting team here. Say hello, Blofeld.
Hello.
Say hello, Jane Blonde.
Hello.
Q.
Hi.
And Felix.
Greetings, everyone.
So, as you all know, this is a live pwnage. We won't, unfortunately, we won't be taking any calls this show, so just sit back and enjoy us torturing ourselves. Today's subject is the one and only Ken Ham on the question of, do animals evolve? So, anyone who doesn't know how this works, we just let the video play. If any of my esteemed team notice any little errors, they just shout out stop, and they'll explain why Mr. Ham's got it a little bit wrong. So, when my team's if my team's ready, we'll go.
Ready and raring. For the ads to finish, yeah. It'll only be a second more.
Okay, and 3, 2, 1.
Why am I getting output for Skype?
It's a creationist brain for you.
Answers in Genesis and Cedarville College present. Answers with Ken Ham. A 12-part video series defending the Bible from the very first verse. Today's question...
See where you went
do
wrong
animals
there?
Evolve? And now, Ken Ham.
I was a high school biology teacher for a number of years in the public schools in Australia, and my students used to ask some very interesting questions. I'll never forget the time that...
Feedback.
Are you getting feedback?
I'm not.
We're all fine.
Sorry, that was my bad.
Okay.
A young man came to me and he said, "Hey, sir, how did Noah get all those animals on the ark?" And I said to him, "How many animals did he need to get on the ark?" "I don't know, sir, but it couldn't have happened." "Well, what size was the ark?" "I don't know, sir, but it couldn't have happened, could it?" You know, I always get worried about a student who can't fit an unknown number of animals in an unknown...
That stopped from sound?
It was. I'll just say, this sounds like the worst chatting up session in a bar I've ever heard. How big was the ark? How big's your ark?
I'm just thinking, because you said I sometimes used to get a lot of interesting questions from my students. I wonder how many of them were referring to his sexuality.
Sorry, that was all I wanted to say.
Told you something about his grasp of mathematics, I guess. It's even worse when they come to you and say, "Hey, sir, how did Moses get all them animals in the ark?" Then you realise they're really missing some information here. But, you know, that's one of the questions that I get asked a lot. How did Noah get all the animals in the ark? In fact, the secular world often asks that question to say, "See, if you don't have an answer, I'm not going to believe in Noah's ark. That couldn't have happened. It couldn't have been a real event." We need to be able to give answers to those sort of questions. And what I want to do in this particular session is to show you how we can develop an answer to that, and it also helps us explain many other things as well. So we're going to start with the Bible and build our thinking on the Bible. In Genesis chapter 1...
Stop. That is the worst way to evaluate the truth of anything ever. We're going to start with this being true, and then evaluate things afterwards. See, this is what's known as an unjustified presupposition. And when you have an unjustified presupposition, that means that you're operating from a position of inherent bias. And if you're doing that, then what the hell are you doing trying to teach people about reality?
And also, at the same time, it's not how science works.
No, not at all.
Yeah. No, I'm sure you can postulate that something is true and see where you end up, but in the end you're going to have to test it somehow anyway, so...
Yeah.
How do you test something? How do you test something that you already presuppose is the truth? See, so that means if you come across any evidence that falsifies your position, you're immediately going to say, "Oh, well, that's clearly not correct evidence, because it goes against what I already presuppose to be true."
Exactly, which is why creationism doesn't work. In science, when, as Amartya was saying, you might presuppose that something could possibly be true, it's how you're setting up your research or investigation question. And then you go and do the work and evaluate whether or not the work you've done actually supports what you were hypothesizing or not.
Exactly.
I think it's in this seminar throughout the whole way through he keeps referring to viewing the evidence through a set of biblical glasses.
Oh, it's that one. Oh.
I think it might be. You might do that a lot. But it's kind of, it's the most open admission I've ever seen that you're sort of filtering out the evidence that you don't want to acknowledge. And he claims that evolutionists do the same. They see it through a set of glasses. In an ideal world, we should all be looking at the evidence impartially. But it just amazes me that he has the barefaced cheek to admit that stuff outright.
It really is.
One, God tells us that he made the animals and plants after their kind. In fact, the phrase after its kind or after their kind occurs 10...
Define kind. Please.
Exactly.
They never can.
No one has ever defined kind to the best of my knowledge, so that's a fool's errand.
All these...
Nephilim Free did. It was a little bit nebulous, but he did something, and it still didn't get us any closer, really, to establishing how many kinds there were on the Ark. But no, it's
exactly.
Just...
And Kent Hovind has this wonderful definition, like, if they can reproduce, they're the same kind. But
well, that's species, so what the fuck?
That's not the end of it. I mean, what that means is that lions and tigers are the same kind.
Yeah.
Because they can't reproduce, but they're still different species. Because their offspring is infertile.
And not always. You can get fertile hybrid offspring. They're very rare, but they do happen. They're more so in the plant world. But, I will say that the definition of a species in biology isn't absolutely 100% watertight either. But it certainly is a lot more useful pragmatically than...
kind,
the definition
which means
of a kind.
Whatever the fuck I wanted to mean.
Yeah.
10 times in Genesis chapter 1. It's as if God is saying he made distinct kinds of animals and plants to reproduce after their own kind. Now here's where the evolutionists say, now we've got you Christians, because we know that animals change. Well, do animals change? Think about that for a moment.
Yes.
Yes.
Because they say, look, animals change. And
they
yet
do.
The Bible's saying God made distinct kinds of animals and plants. Well, let's delve into this a bit more. When I visited the Natural History Museum in London, it's very interesting. You walk past in one particular room a bust of Darwin, and here is their room dedicated to Darwinian evolution. And as you walk in, on the left there's a sign, and it says this. Before Charles Darwin, most people believed that God created all living things in exactly the form that we see them today. This is the basis of the doctrine of creation. Stop right there for a moment.
Hold on a second. Because didn't we have Lamarckian evolution prior to Darwinian?
No, Lamarckian came after. That was Lamarck was a social Darwinist. He was effectively saying that basically you could teach it. Say if we took a chimpanzee from a zoo and we taught it how to correctly use Black and Decker and all the other carpentry tools, that, so that he could make stuff, brilliant furniture. He could make wonderful set of wonderful dining table and set of chairs. Somehow, because we had taught that chimpanzee to do that, if we then remove that chimpanzee from all of that carpentry equipment, we could get a child from that chimpanzee, we could take it away from its parent, so there was no contact with it, and that child chimpanzee would then be able to, given carpentry tools, create a wonderfully, wonderfully beautiful dining table and chair set. That was social Darwinism, Lamarckian.
And you also believe that if you work out a lot, your kids are going to get stronger.
Okay, yeah. Gotcha.
I would just say that no, Lamarckian evolution was before Darwin. I've just looked it up. He died in 1829, and Origin of Species was published, I think, 30 years after that.
All right. So I was right. I beat the scientists on that one. That's insane.
But still, anyway, the ancient Greek had. Some idea of evolution as well. They just didn't have the theory that
everybody was fairly good. They were like, oh yeah, things change. We appreciate this. I mean, you can see that just in humans. I mean, no child looks exactly like their parents. So
exactly.
Why is that? You know, so they knew about that way before Darwin. So yeah. it wasn't this whole everything was created exactly as it is right now.
So I think there might be a but coming in what Ken Ham has to say, so let's see what he says after this.
Probably.
That's not true. I don't believe God created things exactly as we see them today. Take a poodle. There wasn't a poodle in the Garden of Eden. I mean, a poodle is a degenerate mutant mutt, isn't it? I mean, it has all sorts of mistakes.
God... Where in the Bible does it say that there was no poodle on the ark?
Clearly, I've read the Bible.
Just asking, because I haven't seen that verse.
I haven't seen that verse either. There's no... And thusly, there was no such thing as a poodle. Or, and thusly, there was only one kind of quadruped, furry domestic animal. So bad.
I do have another book, not the Bible, but it does say much the same thing. It says that there weren't tangerines in the Garden of Eden.
Tangerines?
But, it's denialism by Michael Spector. He's talking about genetic modification. He's talking about how we have been altering plants' genes for thousands of years. And he points out that the nectarine is not a naturally occurring species or variety. So that's the point that Ken Ham's getting on with the poodle. But yeah, it's not in the Bible that there were no poodles on the ark.
I didn't think so.
Onwards.
I didn't make any plans either.
No, well, we probably did, but it's not mentioned. But yeah, for some reason, what I want to know, it's a complete aside, but you know that Noah deduces that there is land because he sends out a dove and it comes back with an olive branch. I want to know where that olive came from.
Yeah.
How it had time to grow into a mature tree, after the flood
Satan.
Waters had receded. Yes.
Magic.
Yeah. Came from Satan.
Anyway, let's continue. Hello?
Yep.
Hello, Zulu. Can we continue?
Zulu.
Poodle's a result of the curse.
There we go.
More than anything. And yet it's a dog, right? It's a descendant of the original dog. But you see, they're setting up a straw man here. They're trying to say, see, creationists believe God made the world just as we see it today. No, the world has changed. It's changed in many ways. Because of sin, because of the curse. It's changed because of the flood. It's interesting, on the other side, they had...
Evidence. Citation needed.
Yeah, you can't just make bullshit and expect to get away with it.
It is one of those things where the explanation is... They look at the problems and then they come up with the explanation afterwards to fit around it. They say, well, it was the fall of man that caused X, Y, and Z. That's not how it works. Maybe it was. We can't say that it didn't. But you can't just come up with an explanation that satisfies everything and then pass it off as the real deal. You have to then come up with evidence to substantiate it after you've made
the claim.
It has
to make unique predictions.
Yes.
And even if we were to take this as true, what does kind of message does that send? That, you know, God set this up, basically, and so we were bound to fail, basically. And now, since we're bound to fail, we have over 5,000 genetic diseases. I just heard that number. I'm not sure if that's true or not. And I think it's around there. Who knows how many pathogenic bacteria, viruses, fungi, protozoa, and just so many defects that can just be brought about, like cancer or just heart problems, cardiac arrest, etc., cardiac problems, stuff like that. Kind of a dick move, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Kind of a dick thing to do. Especially when you're the person who is ultimately to blame for this creation.
Well, I thought we established in an earlier live show that I am the one who is to blame because I haven't been baptized.
You need to
you
get
been baptized.
You need to get baptized so that we can take a hair dryer to your head and then de-baptize you because that's the most yeah. thing you can do with a baptism.
No, my parents are atheists, so they decided to screw tradition.
Lucky
you
guy.
We're letting the kid choose for himself, and then I read the Bible, and that made the choice pretty easy.
You realize that we will now have to tie you to a stake and burn you, and I shall have to join you because I've not been baptized either.
Oh, cool.
I was baptized.
You tie me to the stake, and I'll tie you to the stake.
I'll have
to talk to
sound, you are not tying me up.
He'll want to be tied to the same stake.
So you weren't baptized, Womble, but you were a Christian at one point.
No, I was christened.
Oh, okay.
As a baby.
I think that counts.
I have a christening gown somewhere.
They put holy water on it, it didn't burst into flame, so that counts as a christening.
I'd make you swear on a Bible, but I know that as soon as you touch the damn thing, your hand would burst into flame, so...
Gasoline? Where's the holy water I ordered?
Oh, it's so good. I mean, you don't really have to... I suppose you do have to swear on the Bible in a sense in this country, but I should do that next time I do jury service. Just dick about and pretend that the Bible burns when I touch it.
Yeah, it's just a random question I've had. This is going off topic and Zulu might kill us. Is it fair to get atheists to swear on the Bible? Because I'll be like, no, tell you what, this is a book that is more real than the Bible. And pull out a copy of Lord of the Rings.
Well, in this country, you can do what's called affirming, where you don't have to swear on a holy book, you don't have to swear in front of God or anything, you just say that you will try the defendant as best you can, or you will be done for perjury.
Well, that's good. It's a nice sound thing.
The whole swear on a book thing.
Yeah, well, because the affirming thing will cover people that aren't of Christian faith as well.
And also, swearing on the Bible, to me, it sounds more like I pinky swear. That I will not lie.
Anyway, we're getting a bit sidetracked, so we continue.
Yes.
A sign that said this: Darwin's work supported the view that all living things have developed into the forms we see today by a process of gradual change over long periods of time. This is what is meant by evolution. Now, I want you to think about this.
At least you got
change.
Evolution, right?
Well, we asked the question, do dogs change? You know what the answer is? Yes, they do. They change into dogs, don't
Stop.
They?
He agrees with evolution. This whole thing is over. Goodbye, everybody.
Do you agree that things change over time? Yes. Okay, then you agree with evolution. What the hell are you doing?
he's going to talk about dogs a bit more in a second, but part of the problem is that we prevent dogs from... What's the word for... What, the verb for speciation? Specifying? But we prevent speciation in dogs.
Diversification of the species?
Yeah, well, let's put it this way. We prevent speciation in dogs by virtue of the simple fact that as organisms start to speciate, it becomes more and more difficult for them to reproduce with the rest of the original species. And in breeding dogs, that's an undesirable characteristic because you want to breed dogs that you can then use to breed more dogs and so on. And so any of those...
What about Great Dane and Chihuahuas?
That has been done. I know about this.
Genetically it's still going to be possible, but surely it's, in some respects, with some breeds of dog, we are kind of skirting the speciation lines a little bit if we're pure breeding for those sort of specific traits like massively big dogs or massively little dogs.
Yeah, I mean, you could end up with the point whereby you try and cross two very distantly separated species of dog and you discover that it's very difficult
to
produce offspring, but then you're only going to be interested. You'll keep trying with different pairs of dogs until you find two that do mate successfully, so again, you don't allow...
Or you just ring species them. Get an intermediate-sized dog.
Yeah, well, yes, I suppose you could do that. But they have crossbred a Chihuahua and a Great Dane, and they had to balance the Chihuahua on three bags of dog biscuits in order to get it to the right height. That's a true story.
I would have thought there was artificial insemination involved there, but...
Well, that's what I've
apparently
heard.
Apparently not.
It's quite difficult to milk a Chihuahua.
Oh, a friend told you, is that it?
Anyway,
let's continue.
But there's also the different varieties of dogs. In fact, we believe in those same sorts of changes that Darwin observed. As you walk into this Darwin exhibit, one of the first signs you see is this. It says, when weasels breed together, they produce more weasels like themselves. Marvelous statement. And I totally agree with that statement. Weasels produce weasels. But what they were showing you was this. Look at all the changes in weasels, and then changes in dogs, and then changes in certain finches, and so on. And they say, there it is. There's the evidence for evolution.
Stop. You don't just start having, you know, species A, having offspring of species A, and then flip one generation, you have species B. I am the same species as my parents. My parents are the same species as their parents. And, you know, that kind of parent-child same species thing is true. Going back all the different generations, you know, across all the previous species that humans have been.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that we are constantly transitioning.
Yes, and it is a fundamental principle of evolution, is that the offspring will be like the parent species. That's just how it works. It's simply that over time it's small changes that accumulate and drifts that accumulate that cause one species to change shape and become something different. It could well be that since the first humans evolved, some part of us has changed quite significantly, but of course at each stage you wouldn't notice it. I'm thinking of maybe something like our appendix shriveling or something like that. But at each stage you wouldn't notice anything. It's only when you then take two members of the same lineage from vastly different points in time and compare them that the changes become apparent. So there's nothing wrong with what the British Museum has to say.
Huh? Did I miss something? See,
yes.
Think about the dog kind. You say, well, wait a minute.
I'll repeat again for the benefit of Ken Ham. No, anyway, carry on.
Teddies, dingoes, etc. You know, Great Dane, Little Chihuahua, poodles, which are really a lesser dog, but nonetheless, they're still a dog. By the way, what were they? Dogs? What are they? Dogs? What will they be? Dogs? Incidentally, is that evolution? The answer is no. That's just what? Dogs. But how
hold
the
on,
hell
hold
is...
Hold on. Is that evolution? What did you call evolution earlier? You just said it was change over time. And Chihuahuas do change over time. Poodles do change over time. There are poodles with different coats than other poodles and all that kind of stuff. You can't just say, oh, that's not evolution, when you just said that evolution was X, and you agree with X, and that is exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's like my parents have got a lab puppy. They've got a chocolate lab puppy. At some point, labs would have all been one flavour of colour, because you've got the three colours. You've got black labs, chocolate brown labs, and the blondie Andrex labs. And through careful breeding, you have managed to get breeding animals that pure breed for the three different shades of colour for a Labrador.
Yeah,
and yet they're still Labradors. But if you really, really play about with it, you could do something else with the Labrador colouring.
Yeah, I mean, even if you were to believe that all species were created, or rather there were a number of species created 6,000 years ago or whatever, they will still have changed by Darwinian means in that time, or they still have the capacity to change in that time. It may well be that no speciation events happen, as we know, of course, we know that speciation events do occur, but in that time, it could have been that God created all dogs to look like wolves, say, and then some of them will have changed their coat colour, they'll have changed size, they'll have changed shape, they'll have changed bone structure, things like that. It's still, that is what Darwinian evolution primarily poses. The idea of all life being related and being the result of common ancestry is perhaps an extrapolation of that, but it is very much a fact that animals do evolve, as he has just admitted.
Different varieties of dogs. Well, if God made distinct kinds of animals and plants, he made the dog kind. Let's say there were two dogs to start with. We don't know how many dogs there were to start with, but let's say God made two dogs, and they get married and have kids, and their kids get married and have kids, and their kids get married and have kids, and you end up with lots of dogs. People say, okay, I can understand that. You've got lots of dogs, okay? But how then do you get these different varieties of dogs? Like what?
He's distorting the definition of marriage. Marriage is between one man and one woman. Doesn't he know this?
But if you go to California, you see dogs getting married all the time in ridiculous little tuxedos and white wedding dresses. You spend too much time on the West Coast. I'm surprised he hasn't got married to a 50-year-old bloke called Shirley yet.
Wolves and coyotes, dingo, collie, poodle, and so on. Well, you know that life is built up on the basis of information, that molecule of heredity, DNA. And dogs have dog genes, if you like. And you get one set of genes from the male and one from the female, and then you get your offspring produced. Remember how we learn at school about genes, not the genes you wear, you know, the genes in your cells? In millions of years ago, for some of us, I think. But anyway.
I don't think
you know.
Remember
how we learned about
pairs of genes like big A, little A, big B, and
so
corresponding little B, big C, little C. Remember that? Well, of course, it's much, much more complicated than this. But the basic principles are still the same. That's what we want to deal with. Just basic principles so we can understand this. Okay, imagine we have a male dog and a female dog. Big A, little A, big B, little B, big C, little C. Look, let me give you an idea of how much information's in our genes.
If
you took just one man and one woman from this audience, do you know, if
it were
physically
possible,
you could actually have more children than atoms in the known universe without getting two looking the same. Isn't that an incredible amount of variability? Do you know how many atoms they estimate are in the known universe? 10 to the 80th power. That's a 1 followed by 80 zeros. Do you know how many possible combinations of children from two people without getting two exactly the same? It's been estimated to be a 10 to the 2017th power. That's a 1 followed by 2017 zeros. That's a lot of information, isn't it?
Wow,
and we could say that
clever.
God put that same
you
sort of variability into dogs and into cats and into elephants and so on. That's why look around the world, billions of people, yet we're all basically a little different, aren't we? Think about it. And each one of you has a unique combination of information. Yeah. You know, some of you have information for black hair, some for brown hair, some don't look like you got information for hair. Actually, you do. It's just you're sort of more like poodles, if you know what I mean. But anyway, we'll talk about that later on. But you see, imagine we've got this male dog and female dog, and we know that in the male, you the sperm is produced, the gamete's produced with half the number of chromosomes. In the female, you get the egg produced and so on. And so you can imagine from the male, we could get big A, big B, big C, and from the female, big A, big B, big C. So you get an individual, fertilization. Two big A's, two big B's, two big C's. And then you could get some other individuals, two little A's, two little B's, two little C's. In other words, you could get different combinations from the parents, and there are millions and millions of possible combinations. They're all going to be dogs, they're all going to be a little different, but they're all still 100% what? Dog, exactly.
Yeah,
so we get all this variation within the dog kind. Say,
so,
okay, it's sort of like looking around this room.
Yeah, real quick. Just go ahead, Kitch.
Okay, it's not like you can sort the genes in A, you know, in whatever way you want. It's not like you have a certain number set of genes, and you can just mix and match all the different types of alleles you want. That's not how it works. Genes can be linked as well, so when
that's
you have
you
a gene A,
like
gene B has to go with it. Just one second.
Yeah, that's why you commonly get people with blonde hair and blue eyes, because, or at least the fair eyes, is because they reckon that genes relating to a hair colour and eye colour are closely positioned or very close to each other on the specific chromosomes. So whenever you have the crossing over take place, meiosis, those genes tend to kick about together.
Yep, it's a phenomenon known as genetic linkage. And so, yeah, if you have two genes that happen to be on the same chromosome, it's very likely that they will crop up together. And the closer they are together on that chromosome, the more likely they are to be inherited together, because when your cells are preparing, or when your sperm or your germline cells are preparing to make sperm and eggs, the chromosomes actually pair up and they will actually chop and change genes on some occasions. So you can still get different combinations, but yes, the closer two genes are together, the less likely they are to get separated.
And actually, just on a little, maybe just a little tangent, just maybe for the audience's information, if they're interested, this phenomenon of linkage is how we identify Mendelian disease-causing genes.
Yeah, it's one of those things that what he is talking about here is Mendelian inheritance after the father of modern genetics, Gregor Mendel. And what is interesting is that because of things like genetic linkage and things like cytoplasmic inheritance, which I can explain if people need to know what it is and so on, there are plenty of methods of inheritance which are not accounted for by Mendelian inheritance. So Gregor Mendel was quite vastly more wrong in many respects about the nature of inheritance than Darwin was about the theory of evolution, but they're quite happy to cling to that idea, mainly because Mendel was a Christian.
Yeah, and there's many models going around about inheritance at the moment. As far as I'm aware, I think the rare allele model, the rare allele model is probably one of the most likely, though I can't for the life of me seem to remember the paper. I can't remember which one, but the common disease, common variant is gone out of there. But yeah, that's probably a little bit too high tech for a general audience, so I will stop talking.
Here we see we're all humans, all a little different, but we're still 100% what? Human, okay? Now,
stop. And we're also apes, we're also mammals, we're also animals, we're also eukaryotes. Point, please.
I say, all right, I can understand that, but how do we get such different varieties as wolves and dingoes, coyotes, and so on? Well, let me explain it this way.
Let's speciation.
Use our biblical glasses. We're going to put in our biblical glasses.
No, let's not.
Okay,
no,
like we
let's
talked
not
about in other lectures.
First, you have to show us a reason why we have to accept the Bible as any sort of authority as to what was or why we should view the world through it. And since you haven't done that, then there's no reason for us to put on these biblical glasses. In essence, you're asking us to accept a presupposition that you have yet to justify, you fucking asshat.
Also, if we put on our biblical glasses, then we are limiting our ability to develop our cognitive critical thinking skills, and therefore stunting our intellectual capacity. No, not going to do that, Nicholas.
In other words, Felix, you go on.
I was just trying to sum up that with just a light remark.
I was just going to take the piss. You see, I was wondering if Felix on our little panel here has got his biblical glasses on. Because you can't see anything through this.
I looked at my biblical glasses and then I saw that they were made by shoddy workmanship. And I said, oh, well, this is...
Well, yeah, Felix Leiter, you are dealing with the CIA and not MI6.
It's most
Instead
certain.
Of big bands, they're evidence bands.
It's not my prescription, and they really got that wrong. And it was made by people who don't even have PhDs.
Yeah, it wasn't made by Q. Therefore,
Kitch,
what were you going to say?
I was just going to say something along the same line, but not referring to Felix Leiter. I was going to say, why do my biblical glasses have huge blinders on them? I only have tunnel vision.
It's very counterproductive, really.
The world's through biblical glasses, and we're going to go into the Bible, look at biblical history. We're going to consider the event of Noah's Ark, Noah's flood. God sent two of every kind of land animal, seven of some, on board Noah's Ark. Noah's Ark landed in the Middle East. So Noah's Ark must have had two dogs, and had two of all the unclean kind. So two dogs are on Noah's Ark. So two dogs get off Noah's Ark, and they get married and have kids, and their kids get married and have kids, and they get married and have kids, and they end up with lots of dogs again. Okay, but this time...
They're wiped out by a single disease because they're all too genetically similar.
You've got a world that's basically empty. And all sorts of different environments, because now things have run down, the flood has destroyed the earth and so on, so there's all sorts of different environments. And we know in biology that there are some things that can happen that can cause what we would call rapid speciation. If you take a large population, and you just take a small population from that large population and take it off on its own and isolate it, maybe even just a pregnant female to start a new population, then...
Hold on. One pregnant female cannot support an entire population.
Actually, that is not necessarily true. Did you know that Komodo dragons can actually perform virgin birth, and a single female can produce males and females and start a whole new population all by herself?
Lizards are also capable of reproducing homosexually, so it's not... but still, I mean... If you take, like, a pregnant horse, that's not going to support an entire population.
No, let's
put this in context. So this is a man who believes every species that exists to date started off with a population of two, and there is not afflicted from just the genetic monstrous abnormalities that will come from such huge amount of incest. There, I think we have a little bit of clarity on this man's mental capacity.
I'll just say, when he said that Noah had only two dogs on the ark because they were the unclean kind, I just imagine Noah having to continually scrape crap off the soles of his shoes. Every morning he gets out of bed. Oh, God.
I'd be like, every day, though. I mean, how the hell do you get rid of all that fecal matter? That's insane.
Jesus, imagine if he slept next to the elephants instead of stepping in it, he rolls off the bed into it.
Basically, it was like a self-contained spaceship where everything had to be recycled endlessly.
And the animals had showed great restraint not to kill each other and eat each other.
I'm still confused. Were dinosaurs on the ark, according to this guy? I think they were.
They have to be.
I'm fairly certain he believes they were.
Yes. I think he's going to talk about that later in this video.
Alright.
So we'll save ourselves for that speech.
Yay. I found a population. Now, understanding the founder principle and things like genetic drift and jumping genes, you don't have to worry about all that. There's things that happen in genetics. What can happen is that genes can be easily lost from a population, genes that normally
Now, hold on. He sat there and he said things like genetic drift and all that kind of stuff. You don't have to worry about that, but you do. If you're going to be talking about science, you have to understand what the hell it is that you're talking about. And if you don't, then, you can't just disregard shit and have any sort of pretension that you're talking about science, because you're not. You're just making shit up, really. Like, yeah, I understand this scientific concept, but I'm going to ignore it because it doesn't follow with these biblical glasses that I'm wearing. Have you worn these yet?
Yeah, it's kind of like this in the same vein of just saying, oh, I'm going to test this, I'm going to release this new drug. Aren't you going to do any toxicity testing? Oh, no, I don't think so. And then everybody who takes the drug dies.
But then you ignore the people that have died, and you say, it's
I suppose we're out dealing with creationists, so that is an entirely possible facts are inconvenient. Yeah. I'm a creationist. I don't need facts, nor will I use them.
Oh, Lord, creationist medicine. Carry on, quick.
How much the population can be exhibited in a population very quickly. In other words, you could actually get quite rapid speciation. In fact, think about this. Think about dogs getting off Noah's Ark and a small population breaking off and moving in one direction, another small population breaking off and moving in a different direction. And as a small population moves towards, say, a cold climate, those that happen to have the genes for long hair to survive a cold climate survive better than those that have genes for short hair, and so eventually only get...
That's called natural selection.
Yes, it is. But also, he's talking about these populations branching off and diverging, like all the marsupials which walked all the way from Mount Ararat to Australia and New Zealand.
Hell, just
has
kidding. No, they had to get to the Middle East in the first place. They had to first get there. They had to somehow... God just, I guess, created a magical bridge for them all to walk across.
Which they had
no
to get to
way.
Before the oceans rose again.
Yeah.
Time travel.
Yeah.
Tide doesn't exist either.
But they explained, actually, how the animals got back. You see, there was this volcanic eruption in Turkey around. And
No way! Absolutely no way would that redistribute animals. That would just charcoal, crystallize them instantly.
We know exactly what happens
when people get in the way of a pyroclastic flow, because it happened to the crafts, Maurice and Katia Craft. They got a pyroclastic flow in the face and they got instantly turned to charcoal. They could be completely recognised because the water had just been vaporised from their bodies, because it was just the dust part of the pyroclastic flow, not the surge part and not the debris part. But they... No! They would just be incinerated in a moment!
Like the people of Pompeii. All that's left of them are cavities in the ash.
Let's ignore for a second the fact that the science-breaking volcano launcher Why don't we? Why don't we consider for the fact that that these animals are being launched at, I don't know, God only knows, what speed? How the hell are they going to survive the impact? How? The G-force of everything. This does break every law of science. In fact, I give this award for the most law breaking, the most laws broken in science ever. Thank you.
Yeah, by his own admission of, by his own admission of natural selection, all animals that survive the flood should be like those gliding squirrels. They've got big flaps of skin between their legs. They can glide back down from a lava bomb.
That's it's different between gliding and being launched.
Yeah, no, but I'm just talking about re-entry. You just leap off the lava bomb and glide safely back down, providing there's some solid land to land on.
Long-haired dogs, and the opposite, and a hot climate. In other words, if we have L representing long-haired genes, S representing short-haired genes, imagine that medium-furred dogs get off Noah's Ark, all right? And only those with the L genes eventually survive in a cold climate. All those with the S genes die out. You'll produce a different variety, but it's still a dog, and it no longer has the information for short hair. The opposite could happen as it goes down to a hot climate. And you can see over a period of time what that can lead to as formation of different varieties, different species. For instance, in dogs, you can end up with wolves and dingoes, coyotes, and so on. It's very, very easy to understand. We call that process, when animals are selected for because of the environment, we call that natural selection. And Darwin talked about natural selection, didn't he? Well, natural selection is what you observe. You know, some Christians think natural selection is the same as evolution. No, it's not. Natural selection is
what
you
observe.
Yes, it is!
It is. Actually, it's half of the equation.
I'll just say, what he said there, with the many species of dogs adapting to different climates and creating new varieties, that sounds an awful lot to me like common ancestry. Yeah. It's not complete common ancestry, because you can believe that God created only one kind of dog, but all the dogs that we see today have a common ancestor from the one from Noah's Ark. And I don't know as it's necessarily true that all the varieties of dog on the planet, dingoes, wolves, foxes and so on, whether they can all still interbreed. So if that is true, then that's an admission that animals speciate.
They can't have fertile offspring anyway.
Zerg in the present world. The selection process for the characteristics animals have to enable them to survive in a particular environment depends upon the environment and the genes that they have. But that is not evolution. In fact, I'm going to say to you that really the processes that are occurring here are, in essence, the opposite of evolution. You know the interesting thing?
What the fuck?
How do you make that mental backflip?
Remind me, I think my brain just paused because of the stupidity.
So,
to prevent my brain from committing suicide, he's described evolution perfectly, and then says that's the opposite. How
the opposite of evolution would be no change, and what he has just described very adeptly for him is change.
Yes.
Goes back to what Hola says, is the fact that they kind of actually are okay with evolution, they just don't like the name.
Well, if you change the name, they would quickly change track. But I don't know, they can admit every single step along the path, but the complete picture, for some reason, is anathema to them.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is, when I was a biology teacher, and still today I find in the public schools, they teach this as a part of the mechanism for evolution. But wait a minute. What is happening as you split up those populations and as animals die out and so on? You're losing information. You see, over a period.
No, you're not.
It isn't. In fact, you're gaining information. Some of it's lethal, and that proves to be a dead end. Some of it turns out to be good. Most of it's kind of neither.
Yeah, and also we have observed new information, as I'm going to define it, as new genes, such as nilinase, RNAs 1B. The resistance to HIV in some populations. I could name off a couple more, but I'd just be scratching just off the top of my head. But I think everyone got the point at that. I don't want to take up much more time.
period of time, natural selection results in loss of information, specialization. You can even get to the stage where they can't interbreed anymore. And I've heard teachers say, see, that's evolution. If that's evolution, you're worse off because now you can't even regain the information that you had.
Stop. What? You're not worse off. It's not that you've lost anything vital. It's just the information that's required to create that species, particularly as they've diverged, is different. That's all it is. It's just different. I have, as do my parents, a common ancestor with the lab puppy that I mentioned. Now, you've got to go back several hundreds of millions of years. Well, not hundreds. You've got to go back several tens of millions of years till you get to that common ancestor. But there is a common ancestor for all mammals.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's most certainly not a part of the jigsaw that information is lost. The simple reason why divergent species can no longer reproduce is simply that when you are ready to produce sex cells, i.e. sperm and eggs, your chromosomes align in like pairs in the middle of the cell, and then they're pulled apart into individual sets of chromosomes to become sperm and eggs. If you mix DNA from two different species and you end up with a hybrid like a mule, the chromosomes no longer match perfectly because they are slightly different in terms of the markers of them and so on. They're not necessarily, nothing's necessarily been lost, nothing's necessarily been gained, but they no longer match. And that's the reason why they become sterile and can't reproduce. So it's nothing to do with loss necessarily, it's nothing to do with gain, it's just change.
Even mix together anymore to regain all that original variability that they had. And see, the other thing to remember is, too, from our observations in the real world, Dr. Werner Gitt from Germany, in his book, In the Beginning Was Information, said this: there is no known law of nature, no known process, no known sequence of events which can cause information to originate by itself in matter. In other words...
I think I know where he's applying on this. So I'm just going to apply this to genetic information. We do know a mechanism where new genes can arise. That is, say it with me, chat room, because I think you guys do know this. It's been said around and offered up by other shows.
It'll take a moment. We're on a delay.
okay, gene duplication.
Duplication and then a mutation of some sort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You've got deletion, insertion,
point mutation.
Got inversion, point mutation. There's several
frame
different ways.
Frame shift mutation.
Yeah.
Well, that's a kind of an insertion or a deletion, but it's the most profound kind of mutation.
Yeah. It covers insertion and deletion. And you can have several of them going off at one time.
So it's just the fact that they keep saying it and they sound more desperate every time they do say it, because it's quite obviously not true.
And it gives rise to information. See, think about this. If you're going to change fish eventually into birds, okay, because evolutionists say fish into amphibians and reptiles into birds and mammals and finally ape-like creatures and then finally man. Think about fish and then think about birds. Fish don't have feathers, right? Birds have feathers. When you consider that, you say, well, somewhere information for feathers had to come into existence. Where's information for feathers going to come from? Well,
according to Ken Ham and his like, obviously the fish would have had to have that information already. So he's not even using his logic, it doesn't work.
But then he doesn't believe that...
He believes that the genes for long hair and short hair were both in the dogs that he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
and the change came about by one of those genes being eliminated. So obviously he would have to believe that fish had the genes for both scales and the feathers, and the scale gene disappeared. So it doesn't even work in his own stupid worldview.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to.
He doesn't believe that fish should have feather genes or that
birds. But even in his own little reality, I can destroy his argument using his own logic. So, I mean, it's just stupid.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, just on that when he brought that up. I don't think the hair length for dogs would go be a Mendelian pattern of inheritance. I can't be 100% sure, but it's more. I think it's more of a multi-gene trait. You know, it's going to be several non-Mendelian inheritance, basically.
As it happens, it seems that feathers evolved from modified reptile scales. They're made of the same protein called keratin, I think. So we have a fairly good explanation of how feathers evolved from scales, how amphibians evolved scales to become reptiles. I can't remember if anybody knew. It's also working on his assumption that genes are only lost, which, as we've already explained, isn't true.
Exactly.
It says information never comes from matter by itself. Matter doesn't generate information. Information comes from information, ultimately from an intelligence. And so you see, right there, evolution.
If you take a simple configuration of matter, just distributed, a bunch of particles distributed in a certain space, like a room or whatever, and you just wait, that configuration is going to change because there are forces acting between particles, like gravity, electromagnetism, and so on. The new configuration is new information.
It is.
So yes, matter does generate information. I wouldn't phrase it that way, perhaps, but he's completely wrong.
And part of the problem, I suppose, is that information is a human concept, so it's still... there are many different definitions of what information is. But so it is quite possible to imagine a world in which there isn't any such concept as information. Information is simply an idea that humans have come up with to try and understand certain things about the universe. There is no.
But then he's equivocating.
But there is no objective standard of what information actually is.
It has a major, major problem. But of course, you know what they teach in the public school textbooks? Mutations. Who's heard of mutations? You all heard of mutations? Yeah. Poodles are mutations. But mutations can be copying mistakes when reproduction occurs, copying mistakes in our DNA, the genes. It can be due to X-rays and things like that causing mistakes. Dr. Lee Spetner, a fellow from Johns Hopkins University, his book Not By Chance, said this: all point mutations that have been studied on the molecular level turn out to reduce the genetic information and not to increase it. Then he goes on and says this: not even one mutation has been observed that adds a little information to the genome. Do you realize what this...
Wow.
I just, for the sake of reference, hit my head against the desk.
I'm now leaning where I've got my head against the wall. That's probably not going to be a good thing for me and the rest of this good ear.
The thing is that statement isn't necessarily false, but it most certainly is misleading, because mutations don't necessarily increase the information, but as we've said, a gene duplication then provides the platform for a new gene to arise via mutation. The mutation itself simply changes the quality of the gene.
What I would argue, I don't think I'm any much of an authority to say what information is or isn't, but I would argue that a mutation to produce a new allele is producing new information.
Yes, I never even thought of that, but yes, so
a change of information means that something is deleted and something is added.
Yeah,
so there is new information.
There are some cases, for instance, for example, something like the peppered moths or something, or when a moth or when a species loses its colour. I'll tell you what, I'll use a plant scientist's example because I'm that bit better. In many cases, when a plant evolves, so it previously had coloured petals, let's say it had red petals first, and it has a mutation and those petals go white, that is almost certainly because one of the genes involved in making that colour has been knocked out, or it's become defunct and useless. And you could argue that that is, as he would say, a decrease in the information. However, if there is a mutation occurs which changes the colour of those petals to blue, then you could argue that that is an increase in the amount of information, at least in the gene pool, perhaps not in the individual, but in the gene pool, because you now have more variation within that population.
I don't think you'd even argue that increase or decrease in information in that individual, unless you've got an entirely new gene. Gaining a new allele won't increase the information in the individual, but it will in the gene pool. And gaining a new gene function via gene duplication will give a new gene in the individual who will be born out of that egg or sperm. I think I may have just repeated what Sound has said, so I apologise for that.
You probably said it in better terms than I did.
I doubt that.
Anyway, let's carry on.
Scientists are saying, in all of his observations, mutations result in loss of information. They reduce information. They do not cause a gain of new information. Now, for evolution to occur, you've got to have new information being added into the system. In other words, so far, everything we observe in real science in the present goes against the idea of molecules to man.
He has actually explained the exact opposite with the whole dog example.
Mm-hmm. And molecules to man, that's two processes in there.
The only argument that he's actually putting forward is that when we're talking about evolution, we can't actually have an increase in information. Therefore, evolution can't happen. But that's literally the only thing he's saying. But then he says, he compounds this statement by saying, everything that we observe goes against evolution. No, that's just your one argument that is even then unsound.
Basically, he just said in the first half of the first half of what we've seen so far, is saying, "No, this is the evolution I believe in," and then in the last 5-10 minutes, he said, "Now let me explain to you why that is bullshit."
He's just twisting everything.
He's using bullshit to disprove his own bullshit.
Evolution. But you know what the teachers say or professors say? I've had students come to me and say this. They say, but wait a minute, Mr. Ham, our professor said there is an example of new information arising by itself. For instance, insects become resistant to poisons and bacteria become resistant to antibiotics. Who's heard those particular examples? I'm sure many of us have. You know what? We need to have answers to those sorts of things. In fact, as we're teaching in our churches, you know, this is the sort of thing we need to be teaching in our churches at a level that students can understand. Because one of the sad things, often in our churches, we just teach the Bible, and we don't connect the Bible to the real world. And so our children go out into the real world, and the real world says, we teach science, and that's got nothing to do with the Bible. And in our churches, we teach Bible and think that's got nothing to do with science. So the world is...
Bingo.
He's putting a false dichotomy. It's not that in science we don't have anything to do with the Bible in the way he's saying. It's because we're working with the evidence that is presented to us from the various research aspects and the like that we're doing. It's a different context.
Yeah. I also want to know what kind of church would be champing at the bit to be teaching about antibiotic resistance mutations rather than the Lamb of God and forgiveness and so on.
Can I join that church?
Well, you'd have to wait and see whether or not they get it right first. But I'll be interested to say, when he says we need to have answers to those, I think that he's right to say that, but he means we need to have answers to that, whether they're right or not. So, I think we're about to hear what those answers are.
Separated God from science, and we know churches tend to separate science from God. We've got to be able to teach our children to show them that we can use the Bible to make sense of the world, connect the Bible to the real world, and we've got answers for these questions that people bring up. And so when we teach them that God made distinct kinds of animals and plants, we can talk about natural selection or we can talk about mutations, and then we need to give them answers to these sorts of accusations as well.
Get on with it! He's saying the same thing over and over and over.
He's trying to baffle them with word salad.
Yeah.
Carry on.
Remember, these people are very dim.
So is he.
All right, as we say, do you expect me to talk?
No, I expect you to die, Mr. Bond.
You can't be right, because bacteria become resistant to antibiotics. Insects become resistant to poisons. Let me give you just a little insight here. With insects, back in 1978, Francisco Ayala wrote an article in Scientific American, and the situation, I believe, has not changed since then, talking about insect resistance. And what he's saying here is this. The genetic variants required for resistance to the most diverse kinds of pesticides were apparently present in every one of the populations exposed to these man-made compounds. In other words, insect resistance is an inherited resistance. It'd be like as if you were all mosquitoes in a swamp and we sprayed you with DDT. And some of you survived. Why? You happen to have the right variation of information in your genes to be resistant to
that particular
poison.
Yes, but wait. They got that way through a mutation. That mutation allowed them to be a little more resistant to, say, DDT, and then it allowed them to pass on that very same information because they were the ones that ended up surviving. Yes, it's inherent in them, but it wasn't inherent for, like, all of history.
This is the problem is that in the case of the mosquitoes, for example, I don't think we have the evidence to show where that gene came from. It could have been that God created some of them with a DDT resistance mutation in it. It may be not. What we need to do is need to actually try and find the source of that gene, or the source of that mutation. In the case of nylonase bacteria, we have overwhelming lines of evidence that it was the result of a gene duplication.
Thank you, Sound. That was exactly what I was going to say.
Wonderful.
The rest of you died out. And so now you have offspring, and they inherit that resistance from you, so it's not that they become resistant, you've just eliminated the non-resistant ones, right? That's not an example of evolution. In fact, again, you're losing information.
Stop!
It would still be an example of evolution. The population has changed over time.
Yes. That is exactly what, certainly the modern definition of evolution is, it's the change in allele frequency in a population, which is exactly what he's just described.
You're losing genetic material from a population. What about bacteria? Well, the same sort of thing can happen with bacteria. For instance, there was a historic Franklin expedition, and which occurred about 150 years ago, and people died in the Arctic, and they were frozen, actually, and when they recovered their bodies, many, many years later, over a century later, they're able to revive some bacteria from their bodies, and they found that they were already resistant to antibiotics that were invented long after the time they perished, right? So they already had that inherited resistance. But sometimes it is true, antibiotics can become, bacteria can become resistant to antibiotics, a resistance they previously didn't have. But again,
Did anyone just notice the blatant contradiction in the same breath of what his point is and now his new point? It hurts.
Makes perfect sense.
Due to a loss of information, it's due to a problem. For instance, some bacteria get a mutation so they can't transport materials across their cell wall as well as they could, and so the antibiotic can't be taken across the cell wall so it won't kill the bacteria, but that's because it now can't do something it previously could. That's how it gained a resistance. Or it might be that it produces...
There's several mechanisms by which bacteria can become resistant to antibiotics. You can get pumps that pump the antibiotic out. You can get enzymes that break it down. You can change the target so the antibiotic doesn't bind to it. And that's just some that I could just name off the top of my head. There are others that I just can't think of right now because Ken Han's stupidity is causing my brain to commit suicide.
No, you are absolutely spot on, Kitch. You have to go on a case-by-case basis, but it is certainly true that bacteria evolve various mechanisms in the laboratory to combat antibiotics. Some of them are mechanical, some of them are chemical, and the chemical ones are the true examples of new information, as Ken would put it.
And the mechanism by which that gets passed on is through plasmids, and how can you transmit a loss of a gene by a plasmid?
But even then, you can start with a single bacterial colony, which would all be genetically uniform, and grow those in the presence of an antibiotic, and they will develop resistance to it. So it's not just horizontal transfer.
And even there are some bacteria that are inherently resistant to antibiotics, like E. coli is inherently resistant to vancomycin,
mm-hmm.
I think it is. And, just another little tidbit.
Yeah, okay, let's continue.
There's an enzyme that breaks down an antibiotic into poisons to destroy the DNA, but if it has a mutation that stops it producing that enzyme, like one of the bacteria that they believe forms stomach ulcers, this can happen. If it gets a mutation and stops it producing the enzyme, then it becomes resistant because it no longer breaks down the antibiotic to form poisons. Or in another instance, it can cause an overproduction of an enzyme to enable it to become resistant, but then it's using valuable resources and actually overall is weaker. There are many, many other examples we could talk about.
Well, stop.
Yeah,
it's made my dog bark, the stupidity.
He's overall weaker. He's resistant. He's doing fine.
That's why they survive. What they don't get is it's always this. What counts as the fittest or the fittest of the species is always dependent on context.
Yeah,
in many contexts, sickle cell anemia is deleterious, but in the context of a population where malaria is a big problem, then it becomes a strength. The same thing with bacteria. Yeah. So what if they're producing tons and tons of enzyme? They're still going to be more fit to survive than other bacteria because they are under the selective pressure of an antibiotic.
Let's just take this onto a higher. Let's just take this higher look. Just more general. We're pretty crap swimmers, right? We can only swim about 2-3 meters per second. We're weak. Therefore, we're weak because we can't outrun sharks. Therefore, we are shit. That's exactly that kind of reasoning. Of course, he believes in this literal biblical view. So humans are automatically, vile shit sinners, but,
And of course, once you remove the antibiotic, those which are overproducing the enzyme are weaker, and so they will evolve to tune the expression of that enzyme down, or else they will go extinct. This is all evolution.
Science, bitches. It works.
They have nothing to do with an increase in information. A reduction of information, but not an increase in information. You know the reason we have mutations in the first place? Mistakes occurring? Because of the curse.
I think I know why.
Because sin and the curse. Yep. And when you think about it...
Citation.
It's creationist bingo.
I made a video about this called Did God Create Cancer? And... But the short answer is yes. Because... One thing that Mr. Herm is probably going to admit to mention, he didn't mention it earlier, is that one of the sources of mutation is simply DNA itself. DNA automatically mutates. Doesn't matter if there are no carcinogens in the environment, doesn't matter if there are no radioactive particles or ionizing radiation or UV or X-rays or anything like that. Every time your DNA unzips to copy itself, there are certain bases in your DNA which undergo what's called tautomerization. Basically, the arrangement of the atoms in it shifts slightly upon reaction with the water inside your cell. And when they do that, they are capable of binding with the incorrect DNA sequence. So, I can't remember off the top of my head, but I think when cysteine tautomerizes, it would... It no longer binds with guanine, it binds with thymine. I would need to look those up to double-check them. But the offshoot of that is that whenever your cells replicate, they have the potential for mutations to happen, and mutations do happen. It's simple chemistry. If you're going to argue that that never happened, then you have to believe that the laws of the universe, the laws of physics and chemistry, were magically suspended before the fall of man. And so the other argument is that Adam and Eve's cells never divided, but given that they probably, well, we know that they ate, because it says that they did in the Bible, so they probably had to replace things that were lost from cells, and so they probably had to replace their cells, they had to replace blood cells and so on, therefore their cells must have mutated, therefore they must have had mutations, therefore they must have had deleterious mutations and cancer. I know I've rambled on a bit now, but I'm really fed up with this whole fall of man spiel.
Yeah,
but with dogs.
Well spoken.
I feel better.
When mutations occur, normally in the wild through processes like natural selection, most of those mutations would be lost from the population because they wouldn't survive as well. But you see, what we do artificial selection. You know, we look at dogs and say, oh, look at this dog, mean little dog here, and this mean little dog, and you breed them together, try and get a poodle or something like that. Or you say, wow, look at this dog here, it has his jaw stuffed up into its face, and its nose stuffed up into its face, and eventually you breed the bulldog. And I mean, let's face it, in the wild, the bulldog wouldn't survive very well, would it? You know, if you think about it, take a poodle. You ever seen all the mistakes that are in a poodle? I mean, these are just some of the mistakes in a poodle. Why would you want a dog like that? Actually, if you think about it, the domestic dogs like the poodle, I mean, it costs you millions of dollars to keep them alive, doesn't it? You've got to take them to the vet every now and then. You've got to give them heartworm tablets.
Yeah, wait, did he just say millions of dollars?
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the more minor points. But yeah, what kind of a dog is he using? Is it having a gold-plated pacemaker in it, put in it or something?
you know, that
looks
that,
like I'm going to have to go around, take the cat out to the back and just shoot it. I just can't afford to keep it.
This is a little off subject, but that still of Ken Ham, like, direct on his face with the giant mutton chops and shit, doesn't he look like a monkey?
He really does. It does look like...
Ken Ham.
He doesn't look like that. No, but you do.
I just have massive respect now for his family vet, who is quite obviously ripping him off extortionately. Yes, his point about our domesticated dogs being unfit to survive in the wild. No shit! That is what we have designed them to do. We have bred them specifically to be docile and friendly and good companions, unlikely to run off, less likely to turn nasty and tear our throats out. But also the fact that they...
It's a big hint at the title, domestic dogs.
Well, yes. But they also live in a very cushy environment where they don't have to fight for their own food, they don't have to fight with each other, they're never going to starve to death. They live far beyond what they would be expected to in the wild, and so it's no surprise that what would be considered deleterious mutations in a natural selection context have begun to increase. The same thing is true of human beings. We now have more people who are short-sighted, have birth defects and so on, but are kept alive long after what they would be expected to live to in the wild. And so that's why these things are increasing, because we are no longer subject to many of the natural selection pressures that we ought to be.
Case in point, Ken Ham.
He wouldn't survive 10 minutes in the wild. I'd like to see that.
They get a cold, you lay awake all night wondering if they'll be dead in the morning. If you take them outside on their own, they can't find their way back home. But you know, the mongrel dog down the street, I mean, you know, it's a mixture of everything. I mean, you can run over those things in a truck and they get up and wave and off they go. You know, there's something dreadfully wrong with all those mutations in our domestic varieties. But see, we keep them alive. Normally they wouldn't stay alive out there in the wild. We deliberately keep them alive. And so through artificial selection, we're able to get our various domestic breeds, including poodles. By the way, what this all helps us understand here is this. When you think about it, Noah didn't need to take on the ark dingoes and wolves and coyotes and Great Dane and Little Chihuahua. He just needed two dogs, didn't he? That's all he needed, two dogs. With cats, we're not sure how many cat kinds. If I'd have been on the ark, there'd be no cat times. They would have been overboard, but... Because I don't like cats, I guess. But anyway, sorry about that. I know you've probably all got cats. But With cats, yes. Some people suggest there might only be one cat kind, but maybe two, maybe three cat kinds. But see, not hundreds of cat kinds. With elephants, maybe, probably just one kind of elephant. You know, your mammoths, your Indian elephants, your stegodons, stegomastodons, African elephants, probably all came from just two elephants on Noah's Ark. That's very, very easy to understand when you understand some basic biology here.
You understand basic biology, that actually makes no sense whatsoever. Two elephants mm-hmm. made all the different elephants. No, that doesn't make any sense at all. The amount of incest that would need to take place, no. I mean, they're not lizards. They can't do that.
Let me put it this way. Cheetahs have huge problems with immune diseases caused by very little genetic variation. There was a bottleneck, I can't remember how long ago, just off the top of my head, but the population was dramatically reduced. It wasn't down to two, but it was higher than two. I think it was 2-3 million years. That figure may be wrong. That's just coming to my head. So why don't we see that kind of weakness, that genetic weakness, or even worse, because they were much higher than two, but they were still enough there to cause these incest variation or these problems with genetic variation? Why don't we see that there? Is it because, you know, God just spread up the mutation rate, or maybe the flood didn't fucking happen?
Yeah,
and
I will say, Lundy, that the Christians have something of a get-out clause that they'll try and pull, which is that incest used to be okay when animals were fit and healthy and didn't have too many genetic mutations, but nowadays it's a problem because we've got so many.
But didn't Neff say that Adam had all the genes?
Neff probably did say that. What does that
like,
change?
Like it was all the genes. That's how we were all able to be as diverse as we are. Adam had all the genes.
it's like that being Joseph multicolor technicolor dream coat, Bonnie with genes, and he also 5,000 genes. He also had 5,000 chromosomes. But they account for the variations in one particular, in a couple of particular genes.
When you think about it, Noah didn't need near the number of animals we think on the ark. In fact, one of our researchers associated with the creation ministry, John Woodmurampy, has a book called Noah's Ark, a Feasibility Study. And in there he does a lot of research concerning kinds and the number of animals on the ark. And he comes to the conclusion, probably less than 16,000 animals.
Is this a peer-reviewed study? I don't think so.
I know.
And did you get...
It doesn't just have to do with, like, how many animals did you have to take on the ark. There are a lot of almost impossible things that have never been really sufficiently answered within the realm of whether or not Noah's Ark happened. Like, firstly, I think It's the Superfly did a video a while back where he actually took the dimensions of the ark and then went, let's suppose that the ark actually existed for a moment as the dimensions that are mentioned in the Bible, and let's try and see if that'll even float. And guess what? Won't float. It's a horrible boat. Horrible dimensions. It'll just immediately sink. It'll topple over. It's just awful. And so that's one of the first things. The second is, how are you cleaning up after all these animals? The third is, how are you going to feed all these animals? I mean, there's a lot of questions on here. Not just, how did you fit them all on there?
There was something which just made me cringe myself into something the size and consistency of a raisin when I saw this program about building a life-size version of the Ark, or possibly it might have been half life-size version. And they said that they'd had to come up with this new way of building it such that it would be strong and watertight and so on. And they said it's amazing that they had this amazingly advanced building technology for boats back in those days.
So they suppose that the boat actually existed in the same way that they suppose that, like, fucking Egyptians, the Egyptian pyramids do. Like, the Egyptian pyramids, that's a true technological marvel of the time. But,
Is it hell? Sorry, I just... I, the pyramids are almost completely solid rock. The cavity inside them is about the size of a school bus.
No, I don't think that they were that it would have been impossible at that time. Don't get me wrong.
Well, I mean, it's so difficult getting the stone up that.
It would have been really difficult and taken a lot of hard work, and it shows the ingenuity of humans in order to be able to do that. But they just suppose that the Ark actually did exist as it was set. And then they go on and say, look at all these things that we have to take into account here. They never said that fucking Noah took all that shit into account in the Bible. It was just he built the fucking ark.
They were saying it was amazing that his boat building ability was way ahead of anybody else at that time. And you're just going, how do you know that? You've worked out that the only way you can build a reliable ark is with this new method that you've had to come up with based on a lot of later stuff, and so you think that's the only way that he could have built it, therefore he had to have been way ahead of his time, and nobody
he had to have built it that way stuff. Because he did build it, obviously. No one's disputing that for some reason.
It's those biblical glasses again. Anyway.
Marley.
Yeah, 16,000 animals needed on the ark. That would have filled probably less than a third of the ark. There was plenty of room. In fact, I can say to Pete.
Wait, how many did you say?
16,000.
16,000 would have fit a 300 cubit long arc. That
maybe
is,
if there were...
That's about 15 and a half meters high. No. No. I'm sorry, but no. That will not fucking fit.
Well, especially with all the food.
Well, they can't
the food
stand
that gets
still
me.
Either. You need exercise.
And you have to remember that everything, according to at least Ken Ham, was vegetarian before the flood. So it's not even like he could create a little food web and start feeding the ants to the... or stuffing the flies to the spiders and the spiders to the birds and so on. They were all vegetarian. Even... how do spiders survive on plants, for God's sake? They only survive by sucking protein out of digested insects.
They clearly did something to the plants, and then they sent protein out the plants.
Spiders were not taken on the flood, on the ark. It was only animals that had nostrils. Insects are still alive then, but still.
For some reason, I have the mental image of a spider with 8 sets of chopsticks eating tofu. I don't know why. But anyway.
Anyway.
Sorry, just something from my
just
brain.
Just a random thought. It still makes more sense than anything in this video.
Well, there was plenty of room on the ark for people. And they were out there when Noah was preaching, come into the ark to be saved, there's plenty of room.
Sorry.
And sadly, only 8 people were saved on that boat. You know one of the sad things I find in the Christian world?
Stop.
It's a man called Dr.
I just when he said that, I just realized something here. God saved so many animals, but he saved some animals that maybe animals that aren't particularly nice that you would want to have. If you were planning a boat, this kind of thing, and you were trying to save as many people, but bring in a good population of animals. Are you telling me that,
but they were all vegetarian at the time. Who knew? Who knew that anacondas were going to be so vicious later?
I know, but just God insects, damn. I don't know.
Who knew that spiders would one day say, fuck this tofu, we're going to get unionized, new diet, we're going to take over the world.
Of course. I don't know.
Why do spiders spin webs? Why do spiders spin webs to catch plants? Sorry.
It's intelligent
to make the
design.
Plants pretty.
I'm getting quite worked up here, but
yes, maybe a badly stated point, but by my end, but
is a progressive creationist. He believes in billions of years, believes in Big Bang, believes in a local flood. Because he believes in millions of years, he can't believe in a global flood. You see, because I believe most of your fossils came from the flood of Noah's day, and some came after the flood. But if you believe in millions of years, you can't believe in a global flood, because it would have ripped up all those fossil layers and redeposited them. So if you believe in millions of years...
If you believe in a world that is not covered in water, you can't believe in the flood either. Because where the hell did the water go?
Exactly. It's bullshit.
Did he just say that?
In the flood.
Did he just say that the global flood would rip off all these layers and redeposit them? Isn't that like arguing against this point? Because we don't see that ripping up and depositing of one layer with all the fossils in it.
Well, I know, but I mean, even then, that could still account for all the fossils in the world. The age of the Earth, just because you believe in millions of years, it doesn't absolutely eliminate the possibility of a global flood being responsible for...
There are other things that make that impossible.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, of course. But it's just... I can't spot any logic there, or anything resembling it.
He has to be consistent.
Hello, I'm Ken Ham. I do not need logic, nor would I use it.
To Hugh Ross, you've got to believe in a local flood. Because he believes in a local flood, therefore, he can't have creationists like myself explaining all the species, varieties of animals over the earth from those that were on board Noah's Ark. And so he actually accuses us in his books of believing in evolution because we believe in speciation. But I want you to understand that speciation has nothing to do with the idea of molecules to man evolution. When you understand some basic...
Stop! Holy
conflating abiogenesis with evolution.
But he just says that
they are
speciation
different.
Has nothing to do with evolution. He has basically said in what, one sentence that he's conflated two things that have nothing to do with each other and has made a differentiation between two things that do have everything to do with each other in the one sentence. I'm sorry, I take back that. That is the most this I've ever heard. God. Oh my God. Yeah.
Biology, this really is easy to understand. Mm. And you know, when you do understand speciation, you do understand natural selection, when you do understand the processes of genetics, it helps us in explaining something else as well. You see, the Bible tells us that all human beings go back to two people, Adam and Eve.
Stop!
Actually, it doesn't, just 'cause whatever.
Just because the book says something like that. Doesn't mean to say that that's what we find out in reality.
Mm-hmm. Also, doesn't the Bible have two different creation stories where actually a bunch of people were made?
Yeah. I don't think so.
Sort of. Cain found a wife that obviously wasn't from...
But I think Cain's wife was his sister.
Well, that's not what it says, but whatever.
I just happened to find a female.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think the implication is that there are women outside of their little group, which I know some people have said that implies that the Bible is just talking about a specific group of people that lived amongst a whole other group of people at the time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just two people. In fact, that's very, very important. You see, the Bible explains to us, really, that there's only one race of human beings. Now, a lot of people today think there are lots of different races, because look around the world and you see all these different people and they seem to be very, very different. We're going to discuss that in another program. But I've had people say to me, now, wait a minute, aren't there different races of people? How are the different races of people coming back? We can only go back to one man and one woman. I know of Bible colleges that have taught that there was a race of men and a race of women to start with, because they say, how else can you explain, you know, the different people groups that we have around the earth? Well, I hope you can start to think ahead here just a little bit and think in terms of the processes we've talked about in regard to genetics and in regard to natural selection and so on, to get an idea of how we might begin to explain the different people groups if we go back to one man and one woman. And incidentally, you know why it's important?
He's not going this way.
Stop.
He's not going where I think he's going, is he?
Well, first of all, I'm hoping he doesn't claim that Darwin was racist. I don't think he is going to claim that this summer.
No, that's not where I was going.
No. What were you going to say?
I was going to say the gene for all the different ethnicities were in Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve had all the genes for all the different ethnicities.
I think he is going to say that because one thing that is inferred from the book of Genesis is that Noah's three sons, Sapheth, Shem, and incidentally this youngest son was called Ham, They all seem to have been of completely different ethnicities, which doesn't seem to be remarkable in any way. No one ever raised an eyebrow at his wife on the subject. What I am more interested to know is why Ken Ham almost certainly worships depictions of Jesus being white. Because the first century Judeans were not famous for being white with blue eyes and long brown hair.
Anyway, we understand we go back to one man. Only descendants of that one man, Adam, can be saved. Think about that. Only descendants of Adam can be saved, because Jesus Christ became a descendant of Adam. He's called the last Adam. He died for the descendants of Adam. He became one of us, of our blood. So it's only descendants of Adam can be saved. So therefore it's important
which
to explain
is, if you believe in his version of God,
now, just to
it's
give you
completely
a,
pointless.
A little way of thinking here to jump ahead. How do we form our different varieties of dogs? Well, you take a population, you have to split them up, to get different combinations of information in separate groups. Now, can you think of any way that the humankind, the human race, might have been split up so that you could get different combinations of information in separate groups, and yet we're all still the one race, we're all still the one kind? Does anyone have an idea? The Tower of Babel. Exactly. Now, start to think...
Oh, even less stupid, I suppose.
Well, it's...
It's still stupid.
Let's let him continue.
I think that's true, and we'll do that in more detail in a future program. You know, it's very, very important to understand these things, because, you see, when we start with the Bible and put in our biblical glasses, and we start with the Bible as a history book, because that's what I call the Bible, the history book of the universe... And when we put on our biblical glasses and look at the world, it makes a big difference if you consider that all human beings are related and we all go back to one man. Doesn't that make a big difference? Because that means we're all equal, doesn't it? But you see, if you believe in the evolutionary view, and you believe that one kind of animal changed into another, ape-like creatures turned into people, and therefore some humans were closer to apes than others, you could understand how people might look down...
We're all really the same distance from our original common ancestor with apes. If you depending on at a certain time, at a certain generation. No, that's both Ken Ham, both. I am visually smacking Ken Ham sideburn, whatever.
Down on some particular people groups because they were considered a little closer to the apes than others, and you could understand how racist attitudes could develop. And you know, that's exactly what's happened in our world. We're going to talk about that too. You see, when you start with the Bible, the foundation of God's Word, then we have an understanding there's one race of people. Just one race. We all go back to Adam and Eve. We understand those other things we've talked about in the other programs. We understand the basis for right and wrong. We understand the difference between good and evil. We understand that marriage is one man for one woman for life and so on. But if you start from an evolutionary foundation...
I'm not really sure the morality thing would really come into it, considering that you do have Christians who aren't so moral, and what else? I can't remember that last one. I just remembered I have a huge problem with it. It was Never mind. Oh, no, yeah, it was the one man, one more marriage thing. I'm not sure how your stance on evolution would promote gay marriage, but let's just continue, because I think my brain's about to jump out of my ear.
I think he's about to claim, we'll wait and see, I think he's about to claim that if you believe in evolution, then you cannot believe that all human beings are one race, but we'll wait and see if he says that.
The man is just an animal, evolved over millions of years and so on, then there are different races of people.
Okay, stop.
No biologist believes in racism, as a racist as it's currently known.
Because...
Not as a taxonomic. Plenty of biologists believe that race exists as a social construct, but nobody really accepts it as any sort of a taxonomically worthy classification system.
Yeah.
On the evolutionary model, we still come from one very small ancestral population in Africa. And so, obviously, the various peoples have diverged from that. And it doesn't really make much difference whether you believe that we all came from the Garden of Eden or whether we all came from Africa. We're still all the same race in the sense that we're all human. You can still, however, draw those lines between races as being people of either different skin colour or different heritage, people of different countries and so on. So it doesn't make the blindest bit of difference. Race is still a social construct, regardless of where you think we came from.
And even, we can even take this idea that we're all, every living creature on the planet is all related to one universal common ancestor. We can say that since we're all related, we're all sharing this planet, so we should look after this planet because no one else is going to look after it for us. Since we're the most, since we have the best, since we're at the best position to mold the planet, we should take that responsibility to ensure a green planet for the for our future generations of animals and people. But yeah. If you believe in this being creation myth, yeah, God will take care of it. We don't need to worry. Which is kind of, when you look at the Christian right in America, that seems to be the promise.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is a bit frightening.
Evolution inherently is a racist philosophy, and so some...
stop!
No,
what? That's just
not a philosophy,
you see? I gave him so much credit earlier, I thought he's not going to play the racist card on this one, actually. But there we go.
Fail.
I think he's not going to do it 3 sentences later. Fuck!
Where does Darwin say that one race will accept race... in the social terms for the time being, where does Darwin say that one human race is inferior or superior to another? He does not. There is some confusion over the alternative title of On the Origin of Species, which is the preservation of favoured races.
Favoured by the circumstances.
Yeah, but that is
not by social conventions.
But that is basically talking about within all species, it's talking about the different variants within each species.
Yeah.
But there is nothing in evolutionary theory that says, since then there is nothing in there that automatically says that one race is in any way superior to another. He is talking out of his arse in the most transparent way that we've yet seen from him.
Mm-hmm. The apes and others, and it has caused people to look down on certain people and to treat them in the wrong way. Now, by the way, I'm not saying that there was no racism before evolution. There have always been racist attitudes when people do not build their thinking on the Bible.
Yeah, and some of those racist attitudes have been based on the Bible.
Yeah.
I mentioned Noah's youngest son, Ham, who is supposedly the father of the black races, i.e. the Africans.
Well, even one more recently, the apartheid era South Africa, they heavily drew it from their interpretation of the Bible.
Yes, and I won't go into exactly what, there is some implication that Ham did something to Noah. Either it was seeing him naked asleep in a tent, or possibly something worse than that.
It was seeing him naked in a tent and then telling his brothers, and then his brothers came and covered him. But that's
all that is mentioned, but it says that Noah woke up and knew what Ham had done, and I think that if you just did that, you wouldn't leave much of a trace behind. I think that
the thing is, he told his brothers, and his brothers came in and covered him, and he was just like, oh, someone covered me, therefore someone fucking saw me like this. That's how he was able to find out.
Because a lot of people have taken that to mean that Ham buggered his father while he was drunk and asleep, and I think...
No.
Because Ham is the father of the black races, Noah must have judged from just how much his arse was stinging that it must be Ham. This is an X-rated show, isn't it? I can say these things.
A little bit.
Yeah. I think that's implied. Trying with logic is rated R for...
Not that I wish to
report sound.
Because of the stupid we deal with. who you deal with.
Oh, yeah, that's... Yeah.
But anyway, but it was from that story, from that basis and from that story that, for a long time, Christians have given themselves the right to persecute people who are black or of races other than their own. So, I mean, okay, I'm not admitting that there are... I'm not saying that evolution is saintly in terms of racism, and I'm not saying that he necessarily believes any of this, but he can't start playing the racist card against evolution when Christianity justifies it in perhaps more explicit terms.
And we need to make sure that
matter.
We build our thinking on the Bible so that we develop a Christian worldview and then look at the world through our biblical glasses. And that's what we're going to do in some other programs here. We're going to be looking at the world through our biblical glasses so that we have the right understanding of who we are, the right understanding of our fellow man. In fact, think about this. Think about the application. Why do we take the gospel message to tribes and nations all around the world? Why does God tell us to go out and preach the gospel to every tribe and nation?
Oh.
You know, so you can make money.
Well, to be honest, it's a kind of natural selection. It stands very much to reason that the most successful religions in the world are those which, as part of their doctrine, require you to go out and convert other people to your religion. Yeah. It's no surprise that those are the most widespread religions. So that's why you go and spread it.
Let's not forget that Christianity wasn't only spread by missionaries at the start, but by the sword.
Yes. Good old Crusades. Where
we're all
be with
related.
That?
Because we're all descendants of Adam. Because we all go back to Adam and Eve. But what we need to do is to explain, well, how come you've got people who are Chinese and people with black skin and people with middle brown skin and people with light skin and how come you've got people who've got armored eye shape and so on? How to explain that? Very, very simple. And we're going to do that in a future program. I really recommend to you a couple of books to understand this whole issue of natural selection. I'd recommend a book by Dr. Carl Whelan called Stones and Bones, where he looks at this in a little bit more detail, and you can read this over to help us understand speciation and help us understand some basic genetics. Very, very important for us to do so we can give reasons to people, answers for what we believe. And another book, Dr. Gary Parker's book, Creation, The Facts of Life. He also deals with this issue of natural selection. He's a professor in biology, professor at a Christian college, and he deals with biology from a creationist perspective. And he used to be an ardent evolutionist, so he knows how evolutionists think. And so he's able to explain these things to you so you can defend the Christian faith. Thank you very much.
It's over.
Yep.
Goodbye, yeah. Monkey Man.
That's it.
Hallelujah. Yay.
Not quite as long as Ken Hovind's nonsense.
Yeah,
well, two shows.
Since it is over, if there are anybody who want to call in, we have about 14 minutes left somewhere around
think,
there.
I think 13 Heathens wants to call in, so if you guys can talk for a little bit, I'll bring them in.
Okay.
Sounds good.
What do you want us to talk about?
So did we learn anything from Ken?
No.
Did we learn anything?
We learned that he's stupid and doesn't understand science, which makes me wonder how he could be a science teacher. That's the actual question I would ask. How could someone that mentally, cognitively boxed in about science, how could they teach science effectively? That's what I'd want to know.
Well,
how much damage did he do?
I want to know how he can have the bare-faced cheek to say that we are not related to monkeys when he quite obviously looks like one.
Yeah.
Except humans aren't monkeys, we're apes.
I want to know how he can claim that that racism isn't supported by the Bible when they spend the whole part of it talking about it basically being a religion of blood for all intents and purposes, going around and killing everyone that's not part of their tribe, the earth being destroyed because of so many people whose blood was not pure.
Yeah. God ordered Moses and the people and the Israeli people to kill like large, gigantic groups of people, not just because of race even, but because of different religious views. I mean that's even worse bigotry in my view, because you can't even tell that there's a difference until they tell you that, oh, we don't actually worship the same God as you.
Can I just say, 13 Heathens, first of all, hello, but secondly, is your webcam on and you're sitting really, really still, or is that a photograph?
No, I'm sitting quite still.
I see.
I was a bit worried.
I technically answered with the wrong one. I was going to have my coffee-powered squirrel as the pick. I didn't mean to share video.
Okay.
That's fine.
I was a bit close, actually, when I was looking for a picture of Blofeld for my picture, because I accidentally half-confused him with Oddjob, and you won't believe what Google Images came up with.
I don't think I want to know, never mind believe.
Sorry, yes, I'll shut up now, and you can ask a question.
You did manage to actually cover a lot of the things that I wanted to comment on, particularly the fact that he looks a little Cro-Magnon. But all this aside, in terms of, you know, the concept of race, there was that recent study that showed that very different ethnicities do actually have small remnants of DNA from some of our early ancestors, depending on region and what have you.
Didn't they come up with the data that said that we actually interbred with Neanderthals for a good while, actually?
Neanderthals, the Denisovans, and a number of different groups, actually.
I think it would be great if we had Neanderthals today. I should imagine that the only reason why we stopped interbreeding with them was because they all died.
All those cavemen, I tell you what, just hot.
I don't know if you want to actually play a little bit with fantasy notions, with sci-fi history thrown in here. You could have a little fun with that and try and start to some of the biblical stories, maybe go back to old stories, going back to, you know, the Nephilim being the Neanderthal or something like that. It's a fun thought exercise, if nothing else.
I love thought exercises. I'm one of the only people around here that does love them. The idea of Neanderthals existing around the same time as us, that actually brings forth a really interesting question. Why is it that we found them attractive enough to mate with them? Or did they mate with us, like, forcibly, as they used to in the past, where it was just sort of like, you know, clunk someone over the head and then take them back to your cave and that kind of stuff? Like, what exactly was it that caused us to just, this is a worthy endeavor to mate with these people?
This is one we could do with Bear, because he's the one that I know of that studies in anthropology. I'm assuming, well, not assuming, but we know from looking at skeletal evidence that they look very similar to us, and I would kind of assume that it's no different than a white person being attracted to a person of sort of African descent, of more recent African descent, I should say, in that you've got differences in skin tone, and there's going to be some obvious morphological differences in terms of the width of the nose, and like potentially
someone's
a little bit more stocky. Go on.
There's something you're missing here, though, which is that we don't look as we do now back then. So there would have been a less difference.
I know, but I'm using a modern comparison to relate to the fact that our earlier Homo sapien relatives or ancestors that lived around at the same time as the Neanderthals, they wouldn't have looked exactly like we do now. But the differences between them and the Neanderthals probably weren't going to be very much. It's probably going to be the same as the skin colour analogy now of looking at the different ethnic groups.
I mean, they did this experiment. They made a latex face mask for Alan Titchmarsh of all people. It's for a natural history program, but they made him look like a Neanderthal and dressed him up in ordinary clothes and got him to walk down the street to see if he attracted funny looks, and very few people paid him any attention. So it's unlikely, that they were terribly different from us.
Well, at least he wasn't mistaken for Kent Ham.
I was thinking like maybe it was the fact that I'm fairly certain they were a lot more musculature than we were.
They were shorter and stockier and better suited for colder climates than us.
Yeah, they had very heavy bones. Probably sank if you dropped them in water, which might be where they went extinct. There's a thought to take away.
In the flood.
You know. We were all having some big sex party on the beach with the Neanderthals. We went into the sea, said, "The water's great," and they all followed us in and drowned horribly.
But this was obviously after The copulation had taken place for the fact that we have, at least northwestern Europe, we have Neanderthal DNA in our DNA.
Yeah.
At least I hope they waited 20 minutes. It is 20 minutes after sex, or I'm getting confused or something else.
That's human.
There's also a matter of the tooth marks in some of the bones of the Neanderthals as well.
Tooth marks?
Yeah, it looks like...
Love bites?
No, it looks like we ate them. We're talking the bones.
It can be both, really, to be honest.
But it's just interesting when you get into that. We kept the females for ourselves and the males went the other way. You know, that's also a joke back to the thought exercise.
I see.
Well, that might have been how it happened. It might have been that as their numbers were dying out, potentially that some of their females seeking mates or some of their males seeking mates shacked up with a few Homo sapiens.
The only way we'll know for sure is if we get a time machine and a porn photographer.
That's why it's a thought exercise, because otherwise it's a pretty pointless endeavor.
Yeah.
I hate thought experiments. I want concrete proof. And time machine is always the best solution. And porn photographer is the second best.
The thought exercises, though, because you deal with all these theists that come along with philosophical arguments, not realizing that philosophy proves nothing.
You can't prove the existence of something through syllogistic argumentation. Existence of something is only ascribed to it after an observation of its existence. That is something we derive directly from David Hume. I think Aristotle actually did a lot towards saying that syllogisms don't do that. What's really funny when it comes to philosophy and theistic beliefs. There is actually substantial writings done among Christian philosophers, of all people, who would argue with their fellow Christians and say, stop trying to prove God using logic because you're not going to do it, because you literally can't do that. Like, I think one of the most, the first one to do that, I think, was Blaise Pascal. He said, this is an emotional thing, it's not an empirical thing, don't try to prove it like that. So... I think that was the first one. Then there was Soren Kierkegaard, who also, strangely enough, was usually on the atheistic side on a lot of debates and stuff.
Well, my partner's a theist, and she always says that all the theists that make arguments against atheism are making the same mistake. They start the argument.
Oh, you've started moving again, 13. Just noticed.
Yeah, I've heard that I do that periodically.
Yes.
Statue.
It's called breathing.
Keep absolutely still. Their vision is based on movement.
And don't blink.
Definitely. Don't blink.
Okay.
Who knows when in time you'll end up.
So anyway, I tried sending a comment earlier, and you're familiar with that park that they're trying to build, the replica of Noah's Ark?
Yeah.
Have you heard of the problems they've been having with the construction?
I know they're having problems with the funding.
I'm aware with some of them. Well, I saw a program about it in its early days. I don't know whether things are gradually getting worse and worse.
Last I heard, it wasn't much better. Apparently, the specifications given aren't very suitable for building a structure out of wood. Even with modern machinery.
One of life's little ironies.
They're determined. After all, the Bible says it can be done.
The Bible says
it can
be done.
We're just not praying hard enough.
We put on our biblical glasses, it has to be true.
Well, hang on.
Down around us.
The praying hard enough doesn't work, though. I mean, Perry had that big old prayer rally. Then we got wildfires, and then he had a second one to fix the government's problems. We had earthquakes and hurricanes. Apparently, God hates Christians.
Yeah,
seriously. When there was a skeptic thing in Texas, they had rain.
Yep, exactly.
Yes.
So that means God hates Christians but loves atheists.
I think I ended up taking the video down because I got a lot of criticism about it, but I put up a bit of a joke of a video because, you know, after Hitchens passed, shortly thereafter, his nemesis passed over in North Korea. So I'm saying, okay, maybe either Hitchens took him with him somehow, or, you know. And I was kind of joking with some theists, saying, you know, why don't you use this as your argument for God? He likes atheists best.
Jeez. What time is it?
Yeah, we've got 2 minutes left, so...
Yeah, we're going to have to wrap up. So thank you, 13 Heathens, for calling in near the end there. And thank you to everybody who's watching the Trolling with Logic stream on Blog TV.
Yep.
This will be posted up on Zulu Fight Runner's channel.
Yep, links are below for all this.
In the hole. And thank you to Pierce Brosnan for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you to Blofeld for being here.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you to Q for being here.
Thanks.
Thank you to Blonde, Jane Blonde, for being here.
You're welcome, and remember, it's double D7.
And thank you, Sean Connery, for being the one to lead us all through this endeavor.
No problem.
And I am Felix Leiter, and it was fantastic to do this with everybody.
Yep, and I just want to come in and say we are actually back in 1 week's time instead of two, on Saturday, and it's at 10 p.m. UK time, and very, very special show with Michael Shermer.
Woo!
They're just after us. So,
yes.
You can have a double bill.
Yeah, we're like
trying to allow you a quick break.
Yeah, 30 minutes after Skeptic TV on Saturday, we're on with Michael Shermer for 2 hours. So please add us on Skype if you want to talk to Michael, or send us an email to the address below. Say all the information's in the links in the playground, so you do not want to miss that one.
Yep,
absolutely.
Tune in for Skeptical Saturday.
Yep.
Or SS.
Skeptical Super Saturday, even.
Excellent.
Yeah, look.
Now you better get out of here quick because the laser beam is getting alarmingly close to Zulu's crotch.
Yes. So, like I said, join us for Skeptical Super Saturday next weekend. So, good night, everyone. Thanks.
Good night. Bye.